Chapter 18. Since she I pleasured once, alas, is now no longer nigh. I've imaged shadows of coursing cloud, and of the plying limb on the pensive pine, when the air is loud with its aerial hymn, but never do they make me proud to catch them within my rim. I flash back phantoms of the night, that sometimes flit by me, I echo roses red, and white the loveliest blooms, that be but now I never hold to sight so sweet a flower as she. Cross currents, they parted a pallid, trembling I pair, and rushing down the lane he left her lonely near me there, I asked her of their pain. It is forever, at length she said, as friends have schemed it so, that the long purposed day, to wed never shall we two know. In such a cruel case, said I, oh will contrive a course? Well, no. A thing may underlie, which robs that of its force. A thing I could not tell him of, though all the year I have tried, this. Never could I have given him love, even had I been his bride. So, when his kinsfolk stopped the way point blank, there could not be a happening in the world today more opportune for me. Yet hear no doubt to your surprise I am sorry, for his sake, that I have escaped the sacrifice I was prepared to make. The old neighbor and the new, 'twas to greet the new rector I called I here, but in the armchair I see my old friend, for long years installed here, who palely nods to me. The new man explains what he's planning in a smart and cheerful tone, and I listen, the while that I'm scanning the figure behind his own. The newcomer urges things on me, I return a vague smile thereto, the olden face gazing upon me just as it used to do. And on leaving I scarcely remember which neighbor today I have seen, the one carried out in September, or him who but entered yestreen. The chosen, Greek text which cannot be reproduced, a woman for whom great gods might strive. I said, and kissed her there. And then I thought of the other five, and of how charms outwear. I thought of the first with her eating eyes, and I thought of the second with hers, green-gray, and I thought of the third, experienced, wise, and I thought of the fourth who sang all day. And I thought of the fifth, whom I'd called a jade, and I thought of them all, tear-fraught, and that each had shown her a passable maid, yet not of the favor sought. So I traced these words on the bark of a beech, just at the falling of the mast. After scanning five, yes, each and each, I found the woman desired at last. I feel a strange venoming spell, as one ill-wished, said she. And soon it seemed, that something fell, was starving her love for me. I feel some curse. Oh, five were there? And wanly she swerved, and went away. I followed sick. Night numbed the air, and dark the mournful moorland lay. I cried, darling, turn your head. But never her face I viewed. Oh, turn, oh, turn. Again I said, and miserably pursued. At length I came to a Christ cross stone which as he had passed without discern, and I knelt upon the leaves there strown, and prayed aloud, that she might turn. I rose, and looked, and turn she did. I cried, my heart revives. Look more, she said. I looked as bid. Her face was all the fives. All the five women, clear come back, I saw in her with her maid one, the while she drooped upon the track, and her frail term seemed well nigh run. She'd half forgot me in her change. Who are you? Won't you say who you may be, you man so strange, following since yesterday? I took the composite form she was, and carried her to an arbor small, not passion moved, but even because in one I could atone to all. And there she lies, and there I tend, till my life's threads unwind, a various womanhood in blend not one, but all combined. The inscription, a tale? Sir John was entombed, and the crypt was closed, and she, like a soul, that could meet no more the sight of the sun, inclined her in weepings and prayings continually, as his widowed one. And to pleasure her in her sorrow, and fix his name as a memory time's fierce frost should never kill, she caused to be richly chased a brass to his fame, which should link them still, for she bonded her name with his own on the brazen page, as if dead and interred there with him, and cold, and numb, omitting the day of her dying and the year of her age till her end should come, and implored good people to pray of their charity for these twain souls, yea, she who did last remain foregoing heaven's bliss, if ever with spouse, should she again have lain. Even there, as it first was said, you may see it now, written in quaint church text, with the date of her death left there, in the H. Westminster aisle, where the folk yet bow themselves in prayer. Thereafter some years slid, till there came a day, when it slowly began to be marked of the standers-by, that she would regard the brass, and would bend away with a drooping sigh. Now the lady was fair as any I might scan through a summer day of roving a type at whose lip despite her maturing seasons, no meat man would be loth to sip. And her heart was stirred with a lightning love to its pith for a newcomer who, while less in years, was one full eager and able to make her his own forthwith, restrained of none. But she answered nay, death white. And still as he urged she adversely spake, overmuch as she loved the while, till he pressed for why, and she led with the face of one scorg to the neighboring aisle, and showed him the words, ever gleaming upon her pew, memorizing her there as the night's eternal wife, or falsing such, deeper inheritance due of celestial life. He blenched, and reproached her that one yet undeceased should bury her future that future which none can spell. And she wept, and purposed anon to inquire of the priest, if the price were hell, of her wedding in face of the record. Her lover agreed, and they parted before the brass with a shudderful kiss, for it seemed to flash out on their impulse of passionate need, aki not this. Well, the priest, whom more perceptions moved than one, said she erred at the first to have written, as if she were dead her name and adjuration. But since it was done naught could be said, save that she must abide by the pledge, for the peace of her soul, and so, by her life, maintain the apostrophe good, if she wished anon, to reach the coveted goal of beatitude. To erase from the consecrate text her prayer as there prayed would aver that, since earth's joys most drew her, passed out, friends' prayers for her joy above by Jesu's aid could be done without. Moreover she thought of the laughter, the shrug, the jibe that would rise at her back in the nave, when she should pass as another's avowed by the words as he had chosen to inscribe on the changeless brass. And so for months she replied to her love. Oh, no, while sorrow was gnawing her beauties ever and more, till he, long-suffering and weary, grew to show less warmth than before. And, after an absence, wrote words absolute. That he gave her till midsummer morn to make her mind clear, and that if, by then, as he had not said yea to his suit, he should wed elsewhere. Thence on, at unwonted times through the lengthening days she was seen in the church at dawn, or when the sun dipped and the moon rose, standing with hands joined, blank of gaze, before the script. She thinned as he came not, shrank like a creature that cowers as summer drew nearer. But still had not promised to wed, when, just at the zenith of June, in the still night hours, she was missed from her bed. The church. They whispered with qualms, where often she sits. They found her, facing the brass there, else seeing none, but feeling the words with her finger, gibbering in fits, and she knew them not one. And so she remained, in her handmaid's charge, late, soon, tracing words in the air with her finger, as seen that night those incised on the brass till at length unwatched one noon, she vanished from sight. And, as talebearers tell, thence on to her last taken breath was unseen, save as wraith, that in front of the brass made moan, so that ever the way of her life, and the time of her death remained unknown. And hence, as ended it above, you may read even now the quaint church text, with the date of her death left there, in the H. Westminster aisle, where folk yet bow themselves in prayer. October 30, 1907. The marble-streeted town. I reach the marble-streeted town, whose sound outbreathes its air of sharp sea salts. I see the movement up and down as when she was there. Ships of all countries come and go, the bandsmen boom in the sun a throbbing waltz, the schoolgirls laugh along the hoe as when she was one. I move away as the music rolls. The place seems not to mind the chi of old. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.